We say the same thing every day, JJ, but it was a huge day, an even bigger night at Melbourne Park yesterday. It was all happening. Nick Kyrgios, the headline act, prime time. He said, "I gave it everything." He lost no admirers, though. It was pure entertainment, and a man to witness it all and much more is Brett Phillips. He's here for the super fast charging, all electric Kia EV6. Good morning to you, BP.
Morning, boys. Big day.
Oh, huge day and a big one to come. As I say, it's Groundhog Day when it comes to this. We're being spoiled at the moment for entertainment value. It's hard to know where to start with last night. Obviously, the second seed, Daniil Medvedev, the Iceman, he blocked everything out. He was like a church mouse. He said nothing. You had Nick Kyrgios in full flow at various moments in four entertaining sets.
Yeah, it was pretty intoxicating, Sam. I was trying to compare, the atmosphere to John Kane, and you felt earlier, okay, it's just, it's clearly different. But, geez, we got into the match, and I closed my eyes for a moment. I just thought I was at another sporting event. I thought I was on the other side of the world, at somewhere in South America at a 100,000 seat stadium watching a football match between two rivals. Incredible atmosphere last night. Look, I think credit where credit's due. Nick really dialed in last night and wanted to bring that crowd with him. Medvedev's such a tough player to play. That first set, you always felt you needed to get that first set under his belt, and he didn't maybe play the tiebreaker as well as you would have liked, but it was tight. Medvedev, break a serve, and then Nick storms back. We didn't maybe quite see that coming from two sets to love down. That was the good part. He kept playing the next point. He played some incredible shots last night. Gee, there was some enormous rallies. Just the angles, the court coverage, the skill of both players. Yeah, Medvedev, he's the Iceman. He was trying to block everything out. He sort of likes that environment. He doesn't mind being the villain. He's defeated a lot of players on their home slams, so he sort of revels in that environment. But I suppose we walk away going, that's probably the script as to how it plays out. Nick has another, brief period at the Australian Open, and he certainly entertained plenty who will remember that experience and probably want to come back to the tennis. But for Nick's career, where does he go from here? I'm not too sure. It's a really fascinating year ahead because it's very, very different for him being ranked where he is.
Just one question on the crowd, BP. He's had a lot of strong feedback from people who watched it or who were there, and the word disgrace has popped up a lot. Did the crowd cross the line last night?
Yeah, the only beef I have is when the players are ready to go. I mean, it shouldn't take the chair umpire multiple times to quieten a crowd down. People who come to the tennis most understand. You barricade, player steps up, let them serve. Shut up. But then there's the people who just want to keep going and keep going, who obviously clearly don't understand the tennis etiquette, and they're just in their own little world. So I suppose tennis is attracting all sorts who... And to Nick's matches, they're attracting people that would probably never go really to any other tennis matches. They're just drawn to Kyrgios. So they don't really probably follow tennis and the etiquette and the respect for the players who are obviously out there in a one-on-one gladiatorial sport going pretty hard. So, it's probably more confined to Nick's matches more than, anything else. But anyway, Nick's, a part of the first week, and, the real tennis crowds will be part of the rest of the tournament who... certainly, I think, on the majority, understand how to behave.
BP, we saw, we had the crowd and we had Nick, firing up the crowd and his antics, and it was one of the more entertaining games. But at the end of the day, he was outclassed, considerably in four sets. Do you believe in your heart of hearts that if he sets his mind to it, that he can really launch himself right up there? Or is he ceiling, maybe 20 or 30 in the world?
No, Josh, in all fairness, I have given up on him fulfilling his talent. I think the window's closed. He's had ample opportunity. I don't think he wants to. I honestly don't think he wants to. Will he sit there in 10, 15 years' time and regret? I don't think he maybe will. I think he goes to the beat of such a different drum. I don't think he really has. I mean, he even stated, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, that if I don't win a Grand Slam, it's not the end of the world. The desire hasn't been there to be the best version of himself. He's not in love with the sport. It's not for everyone. Luke Saville even said it, in commentary last night, and a lot of players have said it. It's a lifestyle. And it's a lifestyle that doesn't really suit him to be away for 9, 10 months a year in and out of hotels, not being around family. It just doesn't suit him. That's why he's not totally dedicated to the sport. We want him to be because he's so damn good at what he does, but that's just not him. So I can't see him all of a sudden just clicking the fingers and being an absolute superstar of the sport. I think he's just going to be the showman, entertain. Tournaments love him overseas. I'll give him a wild card because he sells tickets, but that's what I think he's going to be.
It suited, the lifestyle certainly suited Sam Stosur though, BP. So 37 years of age, her singles career comes to an end at the Australian Open. She won the US Open back in 2011, of course. So at the end of an era for Sam Stosur.
Yeah, great ovation. I'd love them to maybe do something inside Rod Laver Arena as well before the tournament is out. And look, yeah, the matchup, the result probably was indicative of that pair and where they sit in women's tennis right now, 6-2, 6-2. You know, the good part is Sam could, you know, still by the end of her career, Sam win some significant trophies. Mm. And she's still extremely competent on the doubles court. She still wants to be part of the tennis world, not as much as she used to with her, you know, a young child now, so it's a little bit less of the travelling, but she can still sort of play those really big events in and around the Grand Slams and the majors, and she might still play for another couple of years. But yeah, great that she got the reception that she did yesterday, and I think down the track people will, you know, certainly remember her and really respect the career she's had. She's been a star, and I hope she sort of joins us because I think she's done more media across the journey. She's very, very knowledgeable, articulate, great tennis brain, and I hope she shares a bit of that in some roles post-tennis.
Those who are slow to the party need to get on board because the Madison Inglis and Chris O'Connell bandwagons are filling up quite quickly, BP.
Yeah, look, these are good stories. You know, you just love to see some Aussies who are battling away just make some breakthroughs, and if you're going to make a breakthrough, make it at a major. That's where people notice you and put you up in lights. And like O'Connell, I mean, I watched that entire match against Schwartzman, who I love. He just gives you nothing. He doesn't give you an inch. And Chris had to work overtime to win that match. But, you know, when you possess one of the... He's so watchable because he does possess the best shot in tennis, the single-handed backhand. He just works really, really hard. And, you know, I'll tell you, the guy who's coaching him, I don't know if we mentioned this yesterday, but Mad Dog Marinko Matosevic is the coach. So be fascinated to tap into his coaching philosophies because he used to have some of the biggest meltdowns you'd ever seen. He'd be one love down, and it was on for young and old with Marinko. But I think he's actually gaining a good reputation with some of the younger players in the system as a coach. And yeah, O'Connell, no doubt, can be double figures in the rankings. And Maddie Inglis, let's hope this gives her the confidence to go on tour post the Australian Open and start to take some big scalps and get inside the top 100 as well. Good stories.
Yeah, indeed. So Chris tomorrow has the American Maxime Cressy in the third round.
Winnable.
So, yeah, it looks it on paper, BP. So that is a huge shot at a fourth round match for him. Now, there's some big games, big matches up on court today and tonight. Maybe we'll start with the evening session where obviously the world number one comes up against Camilla Giorgi from 7 o'clock on Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah, we're going to call that live, and then we'll be watching on the monitor side by side Osaka up against Annie Simova. So great that they're going to be playing sort of at the same time to anticipate that fourth round matchup, which we hope is going to take place on Sunday. But yeah, look, Ash, as we've been saying all week, if she can execute her game, not too many are going to beat her. And I don't know if Georgie's going to have the patience to and the capabilities technically to sort of just cope with the Ash style game. But I do give Annie Simova a chance against Osaka. I think she's got some real power off the ground. She's very competent, very talented youngster. So I don't think Naomi's going to have it all her own way, and we'll be in for a bit of a fight there. So, yeah, it's prime time tonight. It won't be as I think it could extend beyond an hour for Ash tonight. Georgie will certainly make her play plenty of balls.
Yeah, don't be late. Don't be late. So Zverev's up, Nadal's up today, and your man, I know you'll be keeping a close eye on him, BP, Carlos Alcaraz García.
Love him. He's capable, no doubt about it. He doesn't care who he's playing on the other side of the net. He's pretty confident about his game. He's been absolutely sublime. Berrettini's got his work cut out. They've played before, and, you know, Berrettini, massive forehand, big serve. But Carlos, the power he generates for a guy of his age and, you know, he's still developing into his body is quite extraordinary. So, that's going to be on. I'd at least predict four sets in that one and give Carlos a big chance.
BP, we're getting a lot and I mean a lot of correspondence on the Tampa text about why can't tennis players concentrate with some crowd noise? Why can't they play like most other sports? We've got some text here about, you know, free throws in basketball or taking a penalty for a World Cup final. Why is it important that crowds are quiet in tennis, similar to golf?
Well, I think in some sports, I don't know whether you guys agree, but I think some traditions need to be upheld. So, look, they probably could. I mean, if you go to the US Open on Louis Armstrong and Arthur Ashe, two main stadiums, there is actually this constant hum around the stadiums. So the players sort of do get used. It's not people at fever pitch, but it's just people chatting, and that collective chatter of 10,000 is what the players have just become used to. But I don't know. I just think there has to be some etiquette. I mean, if you go to the Davis Cup, when the Davis Cup was the proper Davis Cup, I mean, that is some of the best atmospheres of all time. But right at the point of serving, 20,000 silent together, I think that's just a bit of respect. I think those traditions are important. I don't mind a lot of innovation, and tennis needs to adapt innovation going forward. But I think, it's subjective, isn't it?
I think one of the problems is, BP, when 90% of them are quiet and then there's a random someone yelling out, that's when it can be enormously distracting. Hey, best of luck with it all today. You're doing a magnificent job. We appreciate your time each and every morning right here on Brekkie, BP.
Thank you, Ash. We'll hopefully get her over the line tonight.